Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We're going to switch topics again today. And this switch came from my interest in exploring different questions in the Reiki community and often having to address some of the differences in forms of practice in our community, in our Reiki community. As you all may or may not know, the listeners, I have tried to make this a program about Reiki, not about one form or another form, because I feel that there are many places where we're similar, and the most important, essential places I feel are the human ones, where each of us has been touched by the energy of Reiki. It has changed our lives in some way, and it is continuing support for sustenance of life and of growth in each of us, and also in the people around us and in our own communities, and eventually, I believe, to the world. And maybe after all these years, we're ready to actually just be open to the different forms, discussions about who believes what, and not about who's right. Because, you know, it is my impression and belief, actually, after all these years, that we all have our own individual sort of cosmology about Reiki, like how it works, what we believe is the effectiveness, what our path is. And, you know, my ideas about these kinds of things have changed so much in the last 30 years, and have changed because I've had other experiences that contradict my own beliefs. I've had the opportunity to listen to other people who have had different experiences, and I believe their experiences, so I want to incorporate that into my belief system so it changes it a bit. And I also have seen in my travels around the world that there are very strong similarities and there are very strong differences. Well, hallelujah, because differences are great. It allows us to not be bored with each other, and it allows us our own individual process, which for me is one of the greatest things about being human, is to be an individual. And as Reiki has taught us, it is also a balancing value to see where we fit in our human community and in the ways that we are all similar. Our guest today, Colin Powell, is from the UK, and he first got a hold of me and checking up some information about an era of my life in Reiki called the trademark era, which was an interesting one for me. It was a great education in trademarks and identification, and in another deeper look at how to define the practice that I teach. Is it really different from others? Do I need to identify it as different? And can I identify it and have other people accept the communication without wanting to change it? So all of those have been great, great lessons and great learning experiences. And now we're going to kind of speed through the last 15 years, past that, to the current time right now. And I understand, Colin, that you've spent a lot of time on the internet and in books and reading a lot. And I really appreciate your willingness to come and share your impressions and your questions and your encouragement for the Reiki community. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, Colin and I have gone back and forth about this interview, and now seems like the very appropriate time, which it is for me too. And Colin, as I have done with all the others, I'd really love for you to share your Reiki story because I always find these inspiring. Would you do that for us?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It was in 1998. My sister-in-law mentioned to me that there's something going on that's in our church hall, which would be very interested in, because you like weird things, don't you? So I said, oh, yes, what's that then? And she said, it's something called Reiki healing. And at the time, I hadn't heard of it. So I looked it up and thought, yes, that sounds very interesting. And I'll go over and see what it's all about. So I attended what was being billed as an introduction to energy evening. And at that, it was being held by a lady who was originally from the town where I live in Salford. And she'd moved to Australia, where she'd been initiated into Reiki. And she came back to the UK to visit her family. While she was there, she started to do Reiki sessions and these introduction to energy evenings as a way of finding students, really, I think. So anyway, I went over to this evening, and one of the things that we did was to place our hands on somebody's shoulders and see what we experienced. And I wasn't really prepared for what I experienced. I put my hand on this lady's shoulders, and it just felt so natural to be doing that. And also, I had this really strong feeling or thought, or maybe even voice, it was that strong in my head, which said, you should really get back to doing this. It's what you're supposed to be doing. And wow. I thought that was really strange, because I'm not one for hearing voices. I'm not psychic or anything like that. And it was just such a strong intuition or feeling that it was actually almost vocalized, I think, that implied that I should get back to doing it as I'd done it before. And it did feel very natural to be doing, I must admit. And from that point, I started to read a lot more about Reiki, and had my Reiki 1 initiation from that person. Then she went back to Australia, and I carried on practicing Reiki as much as I could as a level 1, and also carried on these Introduction to Energy evenings while I retitled it as a Relaxation Evening. Uh-huh. And it was basically teaching some meditation, relaxation exercises, but also offering Reiki sessions for anybody that wanted them. So when a few months later she came back to visit her family again and told me that she felt I was ready for the next 2 levels. So rather unorthodoxly, I actually received my Reiki 2 and 3 at the same time, and I'll explain a little bit more about that because it does sound a bit strange. My first Reiki teacher had been initiated into Reiki at the end of a lecture by somebody who was doing a book tour. She and several other people attended this lecture, which was about Reiki and another healing modality called Seikim.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and at the end of the lecture, the person giving it said, okay, if anyone would like to be attuned all the way up to Reiki Master in Reiki and Seikim, make a queue. And he went through and attuned the people who were waiting in the queue and gave them a copy of his overhead notes and the instructions for doing the attunement with the symbols. So when my teacher initiated me, I was given a copy of the attunement method with the symbols and a little handout that she'd prepared herself, a little bit about what Reiki was. And really, that was about it. And I thought, that's all there is to it, really. And decided that I was wanted to find out a lot more about it than I had been told, and as a result of that, I discovered the wealth of information and misinformation which is on the internet, and decided to try and sift through that and try and find something which resonated with me that I could teach.
Mm-hmm. That's a great method.
Yeah, because there was such a lot of that out there, so many conflicting things, and so many things that didn't seem quite right to me, that I thought, this is such a great gift that it deserves more than just being given a piece of paper and instructions of how to initiate somebody. So I decided that I would write my own Reiki manuals before I started to teach, and did lots of research to in order to do that. And while I was doing that, I was constantly modifying as I came across new information, and also as a result of being part of the internet community, I joined several discussion groups. Mm-hmm. And forums about Reiki, some of whom were really interested in finding out the roots of Reiki in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's what I felt was going to be the place to actually find the truth, I joined that and was a very avid and interested member. And I was particularly interested when the gentleman called Hiroshi Doi was invited over to Vancouver to give a talk at a symposium there in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go over there, but I did attend a workshop given by people who did attend in order to spread what they learnt there. As a result of that, I attended a seminar to become a teacher in Gendai Reiki, which is Hiroshi Doi's system,
mm-hmm.
which I found interesting. That system is really a mixture of several different styles. It really contains what Hiroshi Doi refers to as techniques that have been used in the original Usui society in Japan, known as Usui Reiki Ryoho Gakkai. It contains some of the techniques that have been taught there, but it also contains some concepts and techniques from the lineage through Barbara Ray, who was one of Hayato Kata's master students. She one of the people that she taught, Mieko Mitsui, was one of the first people over in Japan from the West to find out the roots of Reiki, and Hiroshi Doi was one of the people that she taught. So we had a couple of different Reiki teachers, and also included some techniques and concepts from other healing systems which were around at the time, not necessarily to do with Reiki. So it's a bit of a mixture. But within the system of Gendai Reiki, there's a lot of what I would consider useful and genuine information which can be backed up from other sources as well. So that was a big turning point for me in the way I actually thought about Reiki and taught Reiki. And then in 2005,
Colin, before you go ahead, I'm very interested when you said that led you to, did you say insights? Or after you took Gendai Reiki, that you had these insights and, or I don't know what you said, but anyway, I'm really interested in what they are. Because I was fascinated by your articulation of Hiroshi Doi's practice and teaching, and would love to hear the insights that you had through that.
Yeah, it was really to do with how what he actually taught felt. I wasn't taught by him directly. I was taught by one of his students. But I did read his book, which was translated not particularly professionally into English, but for all that, it did feel really nice to read. And the feeling that came from reading that book and also the information contained in it did resonate with me.
Great.
In terms of the amount of historical information, although at that time not particularly well corroborated, has been since some of it. It did seem to sit very well with me, and that's what I particularly interested in is really historical facts and things which can be which check out. To see how things have, where they've come from, and how it's developed.
I see.
And that's what I found particularly interesting about it, because it had lots of information about Macau Sui, and including information about the memorial stone, which until then I hadn't heard anything about. And that contained lots of useful information. And also to hear about various techniques that were different to the way that most people I'd heard speak about Reiki. The fact that you didn't just have to put your hands there and keep them still. You could actually also do slightly different things as well, like patting and stroking and using your eyes and your breath, etc. And I found it quite fascinating. But at that point, I still continue to practice the way I'd always done, with just hands-on. But I found it very interesting, and also the fact that it also appeared to be corroborated in from some other sources as well, such as a booklet that was produced in the mid-70s by Yasu Ryoho Gakkai. It contains as you're probably aware, like an interview with Macau Sui, in which he mentions these various techniques, that how he would treat various conditions by laying on of hands, but also gazing at and stroking and patting with the hands as well, and also mentioned other techniques such as Hatsu Rei Ho, which is a like a meditation for enhancing your sensitivity to Reiki and actually emanating the Reiki from within. So things like that really piqued my interest, and I wanted to find out more about them and where they'd come from as well, and to find further corroboration of them. And that's what led me to my next style of Reiki, which I was initiated into, which is Kumiho which was really came from a Buddhist monk called Hyakuten Inamoto, who was taught by a lady called Chiyoko Yamaguchi. In Kyoto, and Chiyoko Yamaguchi, who I will probably mention again later, was taught originally by Chijiro Hayashi, who taught your grandmother. And therefore I thought it would be very useful to attend a Komiyo Reiki class, because again the opportunity arose when somebody teaching that arrived in the UK. So I attended that, and again found it very interesting, very similar to Gendai Reiki in a lot of respects, in that again they had these various techniques that involved moving the hands, and breathing techniques, and the Hatsu Reiho were present in that style as well. Although there were other more Buddhist related things in, such as mudras and things like that involved as well, which although interesting, didn't sit quite as well with me. But nonetheless, it was very interesting, and that also led me to really to the next stage as well, which was to attend a Jikiden Reiki seminar. And Jikiden Reiki also comes from Chyoko Yamaguchi. And nowadays, since Chyoko died in 2003, it's taught by her son Tadao Yamaguchi, who came to the UK in 2007. So I really wanted to take the opportunity to go and meet him, and through an interpreter, share some of what I'd researched and experienced, and see how it fitted really with what he and his mother believed and taught. And again, I was pleasantly surprised at the wealth of evidence, documentary evidence, photographs and certificates that that family has about Reiki as Shigeo Hayashi taught it in the 1930s in Japan. He's really one of the only people that I've actually come across who can actually, or is willing to, show that information to people. So that again really piqued my interest, because of my interest in the history and development of Reiki. And as a result of attending that seminar, which was really over several days, it was a teaching of Shoden and Okuden, which is roughly equivalent to the first and second degrees, I discovered that there was going to be a trip to Japan the following year, to Tokyo and Kyoto. And it had always been one of my dreams to go and visit Japan, because of my interest in Reiki, and I thought this may well be the opportunity for me. So I did actually go to Japan, where we, with a group of Jikiden Reiki students, and attended another seminar with Tadao Yamaguchi, repeating the Shoden and Okuden, because that's what's encouraged in that style, to repeat the seminars. And I think it's quite a good thing as well, because you can still pick up new bits and pieces. No two seminars are the same in all respects, because you have different groups of people there asking different questions. So you do hear snippets of new information and pick things up, which is really nice. You wouldn't have heard otherwise. We also visited Usui's Memorial Stone, climbed Mount Kurama, and had a couple of very interesting guys to take us around there through the various temples and shrines, who were also Reiki teachers, and in various styles, from who were Japanese. And it was just fascinating to listen to them and how they related all the various things to what, how they practiced Reiki. And yes, and then last year, July, I met with Tadao again, this time in the UK, and attended the Shihan Kaku seminar, which is assistant teacher, which in that style then allows me to be able to initiate people into the Shoden level, the first level of Jikiden Reiki. And I've really since then really found as though I'm getting really close to what Reiki is all about, from a theoretical point of view and practical point of view, and through practicing the various styles and self-treatment over that period of time. Obviously it does also give you an insight into the spiritual aspects of Reiki as well. And yes, That's basically where I'm at the moment, really, is dealing with assimilating what I've learned with Jikiden. But what also what's that has also done, as I continue to research Reiki through other Reiki teachers and communities on the internet and through my own reading, it's also led me to realize that what your grandmother Hawaiata Kata was teaching was so very, not so very different as some people had earlier led me to believe, and that was really reassuring. So
Right.
I'm basically going around in a big circle.
Well, I find your journey just fascinating and wonderful. I think that it's great to follow your sense to for anybody, any Reiki student, to follow their sense of excuse me, what's important to them, and to be able to ask the questions and find the answers for yourself. And I'm just wondering, how has it been to have these different, initiations and to feel a kind of layering? I just, as your story went on, I just felt these layerings of different practices. And then wondering, was it confusing for you at all? Or did you handle your confusion by seeking more information?
Yeah, I think I tended to handle confusion by seeking more information where I could get some corroboration for things which appeared to conflict. Then it tended to, certainly in most cases, resolve itself once I actually could find secondary evidence to back things up. So I had
Right.
this corroboration for some things.
Right. I have another question for you that maybe comes from left field, but okay. In my some of the things that have happened in my experience of Reiki, and then hearing or reading some of the material, because I'm not in a position at this moment in my lifetime to be as neutral as I would like to be about all the things that are written on the internet. So I'm not courageous enough really to go through the internet and do what you did. There's a part of me that would love to do that, and I'm really grateful for those people like you who are able to do that without getting hooked into your own personal processes. It would take me years to do this web search, and then I'd have to start all over again. But anyway, what happened for me is that I went to my own impressions of what being Japanese is in my own life, my own family, and my own teaching from my grandmother and my aunties and so on. And I went back to the history of Japan and created for myself what I would call a context for the different questions that have come up. And one of them, for instance, is this question about, was Mikao Usui a Buddhist or a Christian? And my own impression was, well, he could be both, and one doesn't eliminate the other one. And then I went into the history of Japan and how what what the foundation belief system of Japan was founded on, which has been organized into something called Shinto, and then when Buddhism came and how that was integrated into the Shinto practices and so on, and all the separations, and then when Christianity came about and what the attitude was for the Japanese or the main part of Japanese people toward Christianity and toward Jesus as a historical figure as well as a spiritual figure. And it collaborated for me a lot of my own what I would call explanations for how things were there. And it's an interesting human device for us to find collaboration for ourselves and to find out new information. So that was my approach. was finding out context. So thus my question. So I'm just wondering, in your search for collaboration, you went back to some of the people who have arisen out of Japan in the last 10 years. And I'm wondering if that also didn't provide you a context for a different context than what you might have held as an Englishman in this modern day. And working back to a Japanese context, number one, which is quite different, and then back into a Japanese context from, you know, the late 1800s and early 1900s. So I'm just wondering if that happened kind of by osmosis or naturally in your process of exploration.
Yeah, I think quite naturally, really, because it seems that, as you say, the Japanese as a people are masters of assimilating anything which comes their way and making it their own. And that's what seems to have happened to a large extent, and what comes through the teachings of styles such as Gendai, which is, as I said before, is mixed together various separate systems and concepts to produce a whole system which is meant to be practiced in modern times. That's what Gendai means, modern. So it was an attempt to produce a style which was modern, which has its basis on various systems.
Right.
And similar to the Kameo, which also brings in some of the more mainstream Buddhist concepts as well. And also, as part of reading around the history of Japan, as you say, particularly the beginning of the 20th century, end of the 19th century, that led me to read about the various new religions which sprung up, and also about the religions which had been there for a long time, and philosophies such as Shinto and esoteric Buddhism. But the number of similarities with the founders of some of the new religions, and the way Mikao Usui came upon the system of Reiki, lots of them are very similar. They're similar stories in similar circumstances. And reading about the philosophies of some of those religions, or so-called religions, they're really more like spiritual societies, although some of them are definitely religious in tone. They do have a lot of similarities with concepts in Reiki, as most Reiki practitioners would know it, particularly concerning the meanings behind the Reiki symbols, for instance. So again, that gave me some background, if you like, to understanding what these mysterious symbols were about, because again, wasn't really taught much about the symbols apart from these are the symbols you use and this is what you do with them. So it was interesting to find out more about where they appear to have arisen from, or the inspiration for them to be used in the system of Reiki. And the fact that they're not, some of them in particular, are not just found in Reiki. They are found in other places as well, and the concepts behind them are found in other places.
For sure.
Other places is sort of unusual places to some extent as well. I mean, in some martial arts, there you can find examples of the symbols and the mantras that are used, as well as some of the new religions. So it's, you can see from reading and studying that sort of area, the influences which would have been around when Mikao Usui was searching on his quest to find the answer to why we're here, etc.
Right.
And to try and find a way that people could experience what he'd been able to experience on Mount Karama, experience of oneness and knowing that we are the universe and the universe is us. And basically that's why a lot of these things have been founded, the various new religions, etc., in order to try and answer that question. And it's interesting to find the different ways that people go about it. And again, they're not that different when you read about them. Some of the terms are slightly different, but a lot of the methods are very similar.
Right. Well, and it was my impression that if there was one that was radically different, then I would tend to question it, mainly because I feel that the ultimate question, as you talked about being one and knowing that we are one and being able to act as if we are being one, and this is taking the words out of your mouth and expressing them from mine, that we are dealing with the same human being, so to speak, with the same human question: who am I? Why am I here? And do I have something to actually do here? Yeah. And and you know, the basic materials are the same. So I find that when we get down to the essential parts of all different spiritual beliefs and so on, they of course are very similar, because it's the same basic question with the same basic answer. And what I appreciate about your research is how thorough you've been and how you've come to this point from what I would call an informational point of view. Mm-hmm. So what I gathered at the end of your story is that now you're beginning to seriously practice and finding out the experiential part of this. Am I correct in my assumption?
Not quite. I think this seriously practicing has been continuing throughout the research. And it's all the research and studying I've been doing is really working on a different level, if you like, than my personal Reiki practice, which has been ongoing since the very first time I was initiated.
Right.
That in itself, I've never had any problem or question with placing the hands on, and experiencing Reiki has always been there, and has made a huge difference in my life in lots of different ways, meeting all sorts of interesting people and basically becoming more confident and achieving things which I might not necessarily have achieved before. So I'm very grateful for my first Reiki teacher for introducing me to that and enabling me to start my journey. The other research side of it is really being on top of that to help me teach and to express and to understand where the system has come from.
Right.
And its roots, the various influences which were around to actually bring it into existence.
Right. Right. Well, one of the questions that we have spoken about between the two of us has been this, sort of understanding or perhaps misunderstanding about Hawaii Otakata's teaching and its place in this whole tapestry of Reiki practices. And I think that the only thing that I can say about that is, you know, she was a really interesting mix of a Japanese woman with very basic fundamental Japanese belief systems and philosophies. Japanese was her first language. So a lot of her English that was spoken was taken out of context. And what a lot of people don't realize is that she had a way of being clear, but in the sense of a Japanese person, it was also sometimes a Zen koan.
Yeah.
And I really hated her way of teaching when I was her student, because I really wanted explanations, and she never gave them. You know, her kind of one-liners that are very famous, I imagine, in our Reiki community anyway, things like practice, 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 and let Reiki teach you, and so on.
Yeah.
Were taken by different people and evolved. So I found that also very interesting, sometimes disturbing. And now that I've had 30-some years to contemplate and be with all these one-liners and in her inimitable fashion, just teaching what she wanted me to know, and that's it, without explanation and without... what's the word? Enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
I found that what she gave me was an opportunity to have my own relationship with the energy of Reiki and with this practice that I personally built on if I started from her very simple way of teaching. And I feel like that's my job as a master, is to give that to my students. So out of this particular individual sort of value of individualism that I have particularly have, I really see that as Westerners, we took that and ran with it. So, you know, individualism in the United States, as you know, is one of our top priorities of everything. So, changes happened very quickly in her teaching because we individualized it. And, you know, even before her death, we started to individualize our classes until, you know, after a few years after her death, I realized that I had individualized it so much that I needed to go back to her original teachings. And I didn't really know what that meant for myself until I began to work with Paul Mitchell. And we started to represent, or tried to represent, the whole of her teachings, taking, you know, all these different pieces from all the different masters and finding the ones that were similar and keeping those and allowing the other ones to just remain in the background. Mm-hmm. And that was hard work. And so I did a bit of research on my own practice and had to go back and reconnect with the teachings that she gave me in this very simple way, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really similar to what I've done, only without the opportunity to speak to a lot of her master students. Basically, I have to, through the different styles that I've been initiated in and read about and spoken to people about, learnt so many different things, and had to sift through that to try and get to the core of, right, of what the Reiki system is really about, and the things that have been there all the time, that rather than things that have been added in.
Right. Well, you know, it's a wonderful and courageous mission that you're on. I really appreciate it, and I wonder how your students are. Are most of them being able to be with Reiki as you teach it, or have you also connected with some people who are very interested in researching and so on? Because I find that oftentimes my students reflect my own attitude. So I'm wondering if you have students now who are helping you in your research.
I don't think I do, really. I think my students, what I try and teach, I call what I teach Reiki Pure and Simple. and that is really what I try to do. I try to, through all the research I've done, try to sift through everything to get back to the purity of how Reiki was taught, the essence of what was taught, which is basically really simple without all the extra complications which have been added in. So therefore, what comes over to my students, although my interest in history and development doesn't go amiss, I do spend a fair bit of time talking about that. The end result is that people get an understanding of what I've come to realize is the essence and simplicity of Reiki practice. So I don't particularly push my research onto people and suggest that they do the same, although I do say that I've arrived at what I'm teaching through this research, and they're quite welcome to do the same as I did, if that's what they so feel.
Well, I'll tell you, if I were one of your students, I would just say thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a big job.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. So, well, I'm wondering, I have another question for you. So, how do you see the world of Reiki today? In this, I called it, compared it to a tapestry, which is what I feel. And I, you know, in the very, very beginning, as you can imagine, I not only had loyalty to my grandmother, who became my master, but I also had a fierce loyalty to my own way of practicing because it was mine, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it was a good process to depersonalize that, to be able to be confident in my own teaching, and I could then have conversations with lots of other masters and lots of other different forms without feeling threatened by it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like it didn't impinge upon my own practice, which is, I think, what I feared in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I was upset sometimes about the difference in philosophies of different practices. In the way that we were taught, it was mostly unspoken, but it was, if you're a good Reiki, if you, you know, the point of this practice is to have good students who go deeply into the practice, and numbers are not so important. And then there was another group of people who said that the more people who practice Reiki, the better. So they made it what we would call available to a lot of different people in different in different settings. And now what I see is that both have their value over the long run. So I'm very fascinated with this image of a tapestry where all these different forms and practices of Reiki have come together, and I feel like we're beginning to form a picture of something, and it feels like you're a kind of explorer of that picture. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah? I know just what you mean, yes.
Can you relate?
Yes, yes, I think that's a good image of a tapestry. And it's like a tapestry, you know, there's no need to feel threatened by any part of it. It's something that can be viewed as a harmonious whole, and people may be drawn to different parts of that tapestry. There are maybe drawn to particular patterns in it, and other people will be drawn to other areas of the tapestry and get enjoyment from that bit. And and satisfaction. So I think, yes, the world of Reiki today is a fascinating place with so many different avenues open to people who want to experience Reiki. And I think it is a good thing that there are so many avenues available. I think the only thing that can be slightly concerning is when the darker side of human nature comes in and tries to exploit it. And that's not such a good thing. So people have to be do have to be a little discerning when they're choosing how they experience to learn Reiki. Uh-huh. I think.
Right. Well, you know, I agree with you. And there was this great movement about 15 years ago about protecting the innocent, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in looking at my worldview, not only from Reiki, but in other avenues of my life, what I've realized is that in the last, say, 50 years, so I've lived 60-some years, so in the last 50 years, my world has gone from a few choices in many different avenues of my life to a universal number of choices in every aspect of my life. Like just going to the grocery store is one of the major differences. Like we used to have one brand of canned vegetables and we got, you know, green beans, corn, peas, or whatever.
Yeah.
Now you can get the same vegetable frozen, freeze-dried, candied, you know, mixed up in pancake batter, whatever you want. And you have all these different brands, and you have organic and semi-organic and cheap. And I mean, it's just kind of mind-boggling, literally. And mm-hmm. our way through that is to be discerning. But then the thing that's really confusing sometimes is what is the still point where we reference all of that discernment? And for me, it is ourselves. Like one of the things, the great gifts of Reiki has been for me to understand and know my own priorities and my own values so I can discern for myself what matches those values and those priorities. And that's my still point of discernment. So I'm wondering how you feel about this and what your answer would be to that question.
I think the answer would be very similar. I think through Reiki practice, I think one's intuitive faculties develop, and you it's as though you have you develop a greater capacity to know what resonates with you, what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps with discernment, I think. You can be guided towards the most appropriate choices for yourself if you listen to your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one way of thinking of Reiki as being your true self, your true essence. If really, let Reiki teach you, as your grandmother said, you can be guided by your true nature, your true self, if you listen to your inner voice. And that helps guide you through the maze of choices that there are.
Well said. And thank you very much, Colin, for listening to your inner voice and doing all this research and coming to the point where you are now.
Thank you.
And it's been my pleasure and delight to have you on the show. And I just, you don't know how much I appreciate all of your time and effort in exploring the Reiki world and coming again to the same point that I have come. So it's reassuring for me.
Yeah,
so thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.